Hello and welcome to another episode of Twimmel Talk, the podcast where I interview interesting people doing interesting things in machine learning and artificial intelligence. I'm your host, Sam Charrington. This week, we are super excited to celebrate the second anniversary of our favorite machine learning and AI podcast. With your help, we've hit a bunch of exciting milestones over the past year, including surpassing 2 million plays, growing the meetup to nearly 800 members, and bringing you over 115 interviews. What an amazing ride. To celebrate the anniversary, we'd like to hear from you about the ways the podcast has helped you or your business, how it's enabled you to find or connect to resources you've found valuable, or how it's educated you about new and interesting topics. Submit your written or audio comments via the anniversary page we've set up at twimmel.ai/2av. With your permission, we'll be including a few of your stories in a special podcast episode coming soon, celebrating the Twimmel community. In this episode, I'm joined by legendary chess champion, author, and fellow at the Oxford Martin School, Garry Kasparov. Garry and I sat down after his keynote at the Figure 8 Train AI conference in San Francisco last week. Garry and I discuss his bouts with the chess-playing computer Deep Blue, which became the first computer system to defeat a reigning world champion in their 1997 rematch, and how that experience has helped shape his thinking on artificially intelligent systems. We explore his perspective on the evolution of AI, the ways in which chess and Deep Blue differ from Go and AlphaGo, and the significance of DeepMind's latest creation, AlphaGo Zero. We also talk through his views on the relationship between humans and machines and how he expects it to change over time. Before we jump in, I'd like to send a shout out to our friends over at Figure 8 for their continued support of the show and their sponsorship of this week's series, which all took place at Train AI. Figure 8 is the essential human-in-the-loop AI platform for data science and machine learning teams. The Figure 8 software platform trains, tests, and tunes machine learning models to make AI work in the real world. Learn more at www.figure-8.com. Just a reminder, this episode was recorded live on site, so there's some unavoidable background noise. And now, on to the show. All right, everyone, I am here with Garry Kasparov. Garry is chairman of the Human Rights Foundation, author of Winter is Coming and Deep Thinking, a visiting fellow at Oxford Martin School, and of course, the 13th World Chess Champion. Garry, welcome to This Week in Machine Learning and AI.
Thanks for having me here.
Absolutely. So tomorrow, May 11th, is a significant day for you. For those that are not familiar with your story, maybe we can start out by having you tell us a little bit about the significance of that day and kind of your path leading up to it.
I think it was a significant day for computer science more than chess. and now 21 years later, so I can think about it and can discuss it without the same anxiety and even anger that I had at the time when I faced Deep Blue for the second match. I always remind people it was a second match because I won the first one in 1996. and I lost this match. And I heard even today at the conference here in San Francisco about many people talking about moment of inspiration. Yeah, not only within IBM rank and files, but beyond that, people saw the great accomplishments for machine eventually prevailing in the game of chess. It's in a game that always was viewed as the sort of pinnacle of human intelligence. And at my presentation at AI Train Conference, I gave a little bit of a background of this quest for Holy Grail in chess. Beating chess world champion was an ultimate goal for the founding fathers of computer science. They believed that would be the moment of revelation, the dawn of artificial intelligence. And I have to say that somehow they were wrong.
How's that?
Because they expected, and we can hardly blame them for making this mistake, because these great, great men, the great minds, Alan Turing, Claude Shannon, Norbert Wiener, they couldn't imagine the amount of brute force that is at our disposal now, or even was in 1997.
Right.
They believed that for machines to make any significant progress in conquering the human domain of cognition, machines will have to be intelligent. It's more like emulating human thinking. But the brute force that IBM could build into Deep Blue to throw into the game of chess in 1997 proved to be enough to play at the top level. I think, objectively speaking, when you look at the games we played in 1997, Deep Blue was not unbeatable. It was probably even weaker, objectively, than I was at that time. But this is a mistake many people made and still making. They think that for a machine to dominate any game, it has to be perfect. No, it has to be better.
Right.
Simply better, which means making less mistakes than humans. And humans are poised to make making mistakes. Even the best humans, the world champions, the top players, we are all vulnerable to all sorts of factors, psychological pressure. And the moment we make mistakes, we expose ourselves, because machines, let's say they have steady hand. Machines getting faster and faster, and with this enormous amount of brute force and speed, they already created a challenge that was very hard for humans to deal with. And this is a pattern that we could observe in any activity. First, we think it's impossible. Then machines are playing with us, competing with us, but they're laughingly weak. Then it's a very narrow window of competition. In chess, it was from 1995 to roughly 2005. And then machines are superior forever after.
You made the point earlier that people put a lot of significance on that date in 1997, but to you, the turning point was earlier.
Yeah, it was earlier because if we want to be objective and scientific, we should look at game one of our match with Deep Blue in Philadelphia a year early in 1996. I won the match, as I mentioned, but I lost game one. And the fact is that machine could win one game under normal tournament conditions against current world champion meant that the rest would be a matter of time. It could take a year, two, three, but it was already the writing on the wall with capital letters,
yeah,
burning letters.
But you thought it would take longer than it did.
I thought it would take longer. You know, I think I could have played better. After a match with Deep Blue, I played two other matches with other programs, Chess Engines, Deep Fritz and Deep Junior, one German program, one Israeli program, both matched in 2003. Both ended in a tie. Again, objectively, these programs were as good as Deep Blue, maybe even stronger, though they didn't have the same computing power behind them. But as I said, it was just, you know, protracted agony. In 2005, it became apparent that human-machine competition was over. My successor, Vladimir Kramnik, who was a world champion, played two matches with Deep Fritz. He tied one, he lost the second one. There were a few other matches by prominent players, and it was already one-sided. And it proved my point that I made immediately after the 1997 match, that we had to look already beyond this competition for an opportunity to find a new algorithm of humans and machines working together. Because in chess, we could actually make these experiments, bringing humans' creativity, humans' fantasy, humans' imagination, and to match it with machines' brute force of calculation and memory.
So what does that actually mean in the context of chess? The two humans and machines tend to operate at vastly different speeds.
But it's still about your ability to get the best out of this combination, because you're going to have two players of roughly even strengths,
right,
operating with the same kind of hardware, even the same software, and you will end up with very different results. Because the trick is, and that's something that I think makes chess quite unique testing ground for all these scientific discoveries, that each machine requires, call it special treatment. because no machine was 100% perfection. And the human's role is to compensate for machine's deficiencies. So to actually find exactly what is machine weakness and how we can use our human qualities to cover it, to make sure that these weaknesses will not cause significant damage during the game. And the trick is that to succeed in playing in this team, human plus machine, you don't need the strongest human and or the fastest machine. You have to make sure that the interface is the most effective. So that's why relatively weak human with average computer but superior interface will be dominant in the game of chess against stronger human player, faster machine, but inferior interface.
Well, I'd like to come back to this point of the human-machine interface in chess and understanding the machine's weaknesses. But before we do that, just to contextualize, Deep Blue, you like to refer to it as a $10 million calculator or alarm clock or something.
Yeah, it was.
Relative to where we are.
Deep Blue would have never passed Turing test.
Right.
But that's so what? So this is we don't realize, you know, how much help we receive from what Claude Shannon described as type A machines. It's brute force executing human instructions at tremendous speed. So Deep Blue just proved that with massive processing power behind the program, you could perform better than humans in the field of cognition. Again, I want to emphasize it. I think it's very important for people to realize it's not about solving the game. It's about winning the game. It's not about playing perfect game. It's about playing better. The same goes for driverless cars now. People think, oh, this is it's not safe. Nobody tells you it will be safe. It will be safer. Again, it's all about percentage. So machines will never perform at the 100% precision, but they will do. Step by step, they will do things better, more effective than humans. And that's all we have to look for. It's just about improvements. It's about incremental improvements that we combined are just, you know, securing our progress.
So can you elaborate on the distinction between those two? In a game of chess, when the human makes a move, if the machine is doing a brute force analysis of all the possible,
it's impossible to do all the possible moves because according to what Claude Shannon, the number of legal moves in the game of chess is 10 to the 45th power.
Sure.
It's insane number. It just doesn't exist. It exists on paper. No way machine can calculate all the moves. So at certain point, you need human intervention or, to be more precise, humans' guidance to help to tweak a little bit the way machine is heading for.
And was that how was that present in the match with Deep Blue?
No, Deep Blue was me versus machine. It was human versus machine. So now when I licking my wounds, I just realized that that was time to think about the way for us to work together.
Mm-hmm.
Though I was ready to compete and I wanted to play the rematch with Deep Blue. And as I said, Deep Blue, though not being intelligent, denied me the rematch because I think IBM recognized that that the match in 1998, I think I had a very good chance of winning because I could be better prepared and there's nothing IBM could gain out of this match. It was bad for science, their decision not to play the third match, the rubber match, because I won the first one, they won the second. Uh-huh. But it was good from the business perspectives.
Yeah.
And the IBM executives, they looked at the stock value. So again, I can't complain. So as people said, okay, you made two mistakes, Gary. It's not about chess. A, you have not secured the next match.
The match, right?
B, you have not secured stock options.
So how would you have prepared for that match differently?
I would have taken Deep Blue much more seriously because I didn't expect the progress they made after the first match.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I would probably demand more transparency with the way Deep Blue operated. Okay. So just to understand more, because we needed some information about Deep Blue. I mean, for instance, one of the biggest mistakes I made preparing for the second match is not reading the contract, actually not reading the fine print. Because to prepare, you need games of your opponent. You have to know how your opponent thinks.
Right.
If it's computer, it could be even more important because machines are less flexible than humans. So by having some games, access to some games, you can understand how a machine, you know, could make decisions in certain types of positions. Mm-hmm. After first match, I said I would need the blue games, and they said absolutely. And the contract said stipulated games will be provided, and the fine print said only played in official tournaments. And of course, the blue played only in labs. So right. One of the things I would have demanded, and they knew it, it's to have access to all the blue games to understand so how they make certain improvements. Then I would insist on certain limitations of making changes for the program during the match. It would have not secured my victory, but it definitely would put more pressure on them, because also I would start thinking about my preparation opening. So, you know, when you lose, you know,
you spend a lot of time thinking about it.
You know, you know that you have to make certain improvements. So, and I was, you know, I was already contemplating. So what new things I could bring in. And again, as I said, objectively, I was still stronger at that time. So all I needed is just, you know, to spend maybe a couple of months concentrating on this match, you know, just getting stronger physically, mentally. So it would be a big challenge for IBM. They just walked away.
So Deep Blue wasn't even AI.
No, absolutely not. That's what's annoying is that it was a great accomplishment, but it was type A machine, a brute force.
Right.
You can even say that Deep Blue demonstrated the limitations of brute force. So as the it's not a dead
end. In what way?
Yeah, it's what you can do. I mean, your improvement is still would be based on human contribution. So it's all about, you know, human help that is needed to program the machines. We still have very strong, powerful machines now with that you can download chess engines on your right. Software. But it's, you know, you don't need these massive parallel processing power. So they're much stronger than Deep Blue, much, much stronger. And it's just they operate on your laptop.
Yeah.
So it's, but still, you know, it's a moment that, you know, it was undeniable moment of inspiration. Mm. And though I was on the losing side, so I was a victim, but, you know, I could feel not proud, but more comfortable these days, thinking that, you know, somehow by sacrificing myself, so I helped human progress.
Tell us a little bit about how computer chess has evolved since then.
Oh, as I said, we have very strong chess engines these days that are far superior to any humans. For those who are familiar with chess, Commodore, Stockfish, Houdini, so just those programs that are so much stronger than the current world champion, Magnus Carlsen, that the gap between them is about the same as between Magnus Carlsen and the decent player from open international tournaments.
And these are all still type A types of systems.
Those are type A machines. They're the type A machines, but they are just, you know, they're being equipped with more knowledge. So this it's the software, so it's sophisticated. Deep Blue could make up to 200 million positions per second. These machines would be, I would say, make 6, 7, 8 million positions per second, but it's more than enough because their search mechanism is far more sophisticated. So they just, you know, again, they do it better, but it's still you call it data crunching. Now people said that with machines being so strong, chess would face extinction. To the contrary, chess is more popular today because it's an interesting paradox. On one side, you have machines that could beat any humans. But on the other side, it took away the curtain of mystery from the game of chess. Because when I played Anatoly Karpov for the World Championship matches, even the grandmasters that were analyzing games in the press center and making commentaries on television, they were very shy of criticizing our game. Even if we made mistakes, yes, but it's world champion and the challenger. How can you say something negative? You are not sure. Today, every amateur equipped with a computer could see that Magnus Carlsen made a blunder because machine is screaming. You know? So now, on one side is annoying because, I mean, following these games on the internet and seeing how this bunch of amateurs are just laughing at Magnus Carlsen makes me feel angry. But on the other side...
Don't read the comments.
But on the other side, it brings more people in because they can understand it.
Makes it more accessible.
Plus, they can, you know, they can look at the games, they can analyze the games, they can make preparations. So I think machines played a positive role overall when you look at this overall contribution by making chess more attractive to millions and millions and millions of fans that before felt inferior to the top players. Just they couldn't be part of this process. So they were passive watchers. Now they feel they're part of this whole process. And we thought that in chess, you know, we would see this gradual development with these type A machines. And the conventional wisdom was that stronger machines are duller the game is, because machines will see the combinations way in advance, and there will be less tactics, and it's more positional maneuvering, and the games will be not as exciting. Typically, the games played between strongest Type A engines, they are, I would say, 70, 75, 80 moves long, while the human game is about 80 moves. Mm-hmm. So that's, you can see it's more precise but less exciting. Now, everything has changed with the appearance of AlphaZero.
Right.
That's a very new type of machine. By the way, I call it here Type C, and ironically, as we can say, that Type B machines, contrary to the expectations of founding fathers, never succeeded in chess. Actually, they just, you know, we didn't even have Type B machines. So it's this, because the idea of emulating human thinking but still operating with human knowledge didn't work out.
And we don't even really know what it
exactly
means.
Exactly, but it's important psychological contradiction in our mind. So we want machines to create a miracle, but we also want to understand how is miracle being created. I always say that, you know, aeroplanes flying faster than any bird without flapping their wings.
Right.
Deep Blue won the match against world champion, outperformed me without outthinking me, because it's just the machines do it in a different way. Now, with Deep Blue, if you're patient, you could spend a year or so looking at all the logs, you know, going deep, deep down to find out exactly why a certain decision was made. With AlphaZero, I don't think even Demis Hassabis, the founder of the program from Google's DeepMind, I don't think even he can tell you why version 5 played better or worse than version 6. But the importance of AlphaZero that is actually demonstrated, that is chess program or Go program or any program designed on the AlphaZero platform will do better without any human data. All it needs is rules, like a framework to work with, and it does the rest. I think it was quite sensational, because while I thought that in Go, for instance, the human knowledge was quite poor, because Go is so complicated, it's a complex strategy game, and you could say that the best Go players today, they would be at the level of chess players a couple hundred years ago, because no offense meant, it's just the way they play, because there's so many options. They have to go through this very slowly, recognizing the patterns. And if you show chess games to a great player of the past, of early 19th century, he will be shocked to see some of the moves today. But what's happened with AlphaZero Chess, that by playing 60 million games against itself, spending 4 hours, of course, with all massive Google power behind it, it created its own scale of evaluation, which is quite sensational, because we didn't see before machines that were able to generate their own knowledge.
Mm.
And the way AlphaZero played was also contrary to our expectations. It played very aggressive, dynamic chess, sacrificing material, and looking for patterns that even for me, it was quite revealing. Because, I mean, I could sense that, but just to see a machine that could have the same kind of sense, that was stunning.
So if you had some opportunity to analyze its approach to
I looked at
play.
These games. And as the,
okay.
So I what I found out is that is AlphaZero, again, out of statistics, accumulated and derived out of the 60 million games, figured out certain patterns and connections between material, time, and quality. Those things are totally incompatible for computer. But just again, statistically, you know, it actually reached a point where it could see the connection. So that's why sacrificing material, playing with a pawn down or even a piece down, was not a big challenge for AlphaZero, because somehow, from the 60 million games database, it had a good compensation. When AlphaZero played one of the strongest Type A machines, chess engines, Stockfish, we could see that it was always one or two moves ahead in giving correct evaluation.
Okay.
Now, why it's interesting, because Stockfish in this match, though it didn't have the most powerful hardware that it could show, that it could give Stockfish sort of the best opportunity to realize its potential, still it was powerful enough and it made roughly 6 million positions per second. AlphaZero made about 60,000.
Mm.
So
it's much more precise in what it chose to evaluate.
Exactly. So this is. So I'm quite happy to say that chess still offers unique opportunity for us to continue this experiments. So it's about the way machine generates its own data, how flexible machine is to change the data under the pressure of sort of a new information that is being introduced. And so what will be the human's role in working with these machines?
Mm.
Because people could get really panicked.
Yeah.
And I'm very optimistic, because I could see an opportunity for us to share our knowledge and just to be what I call the shepherds of guiding these AI flocks.
Did you find when evaluating these AlphaZero games that it exhibited an entirely new style of play, or did you recognize a human element in it, or a reaction to the human
new
element?
Style. It played more like Garry Kasparov than Anatoly Karpov. Again, contrary to the conventional wisdom that believes stronger machines will play more defensive chess. But what was new there is that, you know, it could actually move on sacrificing material without seeing immediate consequences. Because you can look at other engines that have that very powerful calculation function. And neither Stockfish nor other programs didn't see the immediate danger coming out of the sacrifice. So which means that AlphaZero based its sacrifice not on immediate benefits, but on sort of projected benefits.
Chess has been very well analyzed. Tons of books written about openings and things like that. I'm curious if, in looking at the AlphaZero play, you know, did you find a new opening or a new transition, or was there anything like that?
Well, it's not about new opening. It's just the what I could learn from the games I saw and few hours I spent with AlphaZero in the lab is that it has created its own scale of evaluation, which is probably slightly different from the traditional approach. Is it more sophisticated? Probably, maybe not. But what is very important, that the machine came up with its own data. It has created knowledge that proved that what we believed was almost fait accompli actually had many flaws. And I think it tells us that no human knowledge considered a dogma. I think AI will help us to fight out traditional ideas that the human experience that had been accumulated over centuries, it's cannot be touched. This is the foundation that we have to build our constructions of our theories. Anything can be challenged. It doesn't mean that everything will be refuted, but AlphaZero opens a new era of us actually revisiting many things that just considered to be sacrosanct.
Circling back to this topic of humans and machines, you've talked about in your book, you've recognized the historical role of this narrative, the human versus machine narrative, and you refute that.
It's one that's easy to sell. Humans versus machine, we against them, humanity versus aliens. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so skeptical, actually critical, about AI being presented as artificial intelligence. Because artificial sounds alien, sounds frightening. it's like a challenge to us. It's something that will potentially threaten our existence because it's a different form of cognition. I believe that augmented is more precise because it reflects the idea of cooperation and it sounds friendlier. And it's very important for us at this point is actually to walk away from these dystopian views. It's the Terminators, the Matrix. I always remind people that capacity for evil is still exclusively human. And the greatest danger in the future, in the foreseeable future, is not Skynet, but bad guys, dictators and terrorists that could have hands on the new technology and they will use it to undermine the very foundation of the free world where these technologies have been created.
And so in the context of chess, you've been working on some projects to exhibit the power, if you will, of humans and machines working together. How or where are those efforts now and how do you assess them?
I think the future of the human plus machine cooperation in chess will be probably in the field of humans plus type A machines facing type C machines. So just to recognize, to test the flexibilities of these new machines. And also we could have the continuation of what is called now freestyle chess, humans plus machines. It could be one human plus few computers or several humans with several computers. It's a different form of human-machine cooperation with an idea to provide the best quality. And I think there's still many, many interesting experiments to be carried because, as I said, every problem requires a unique combination of humans plus machines. And what we learn from chess and what I think will be also the case in medicine, in medical diagnosis, you don't need top experts to work with the best machines. Moreover, sometimes having the best expert in the industry could be counterproductive because machines are already superior in many in many instances. And you just have to recognize that you are there to form a partnership, but to be a partner that belongs to last few decimal places. There's nothing wrong about it because we can start looking at our exclusively human qualities. I think that AI will, intelligent machines will make us smarter. Consider it as a form of promotion because we can start thinking about questions. We can start thinking about concepts. We can strategize. There's still so many things that we do and machines cannot do it yet or just definitely will not do it in foreseeable future. And I want people to stop fretting, stop talking about AGI that will dominate the world and will make us relevant. I mean, let's look at the current problems and let's see how we can turn these most powerful tools that ever been created to make our lives better. That's what we always did with new breakthrough technologies in the past.
Well, Gary, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
Thanks for inviting me.
Awesome.
And it's definitely to be continued.
To be continued.
Because AlphaZero is the beginning of a new era, and I'm sure that every 6 months will keep bringing us more news. And again, I want people to remember the future is self-fulfilling prophecy. And it's for us to be optimistic and just to look for opportunities, not ignoring the problems, but not to concentrate too much on the negative side.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. That's our show for today. For more information on Gary or any of the topics covered in this episode, head on over to twimlai.com/talk/140. Thanks again to Figure Eight for their sponsorship of this episode. To follow along with the Train AI series, visit twimlai.com/trainai2018. And last but not least, check out our anniversary festivities and share your story at twimlai.com/2AV. Thanks so much for listening and catch you next time.